cliffcentral.com.
I hope you are loving this morning. It is Monday. We got to enjoy every one of these summer days while we've still got them, and especially the ones where it's not raining. But as we said earlier, obviously everybody's very pleased about the fact that there are parts of the Free State, for example, that are looking greener than ever. And that's great because it means our farmers aren't going to be struggling. And hopefully they haven't had so much rain that it's actually going to affect crops negatively. But it means that we may have a very good harvest this year, which is terrific. All right, so much to get to. Sia Sangweni is here. Leanne Moll is here. And we're going to be joined by Marion Scherr a little bit later on. That's an interesting statistic. So just before we went to the break, I mentioned that 1 in 3 South Africans are on medication for anxiety and or depression. That means either you're one of them or you know someone who is going through that. You're not on any of that stuff, are you, Sia?
No, I'm not, but I know 3 people in my circle who are on medication.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most widespread prescription, I think, in South Africa is for antidepressants or anti-anxiety medication. As, aren't you on something?
Yeah, I'm on 2 different types. Sure. A double dose of one and then a single dose of the other at night.
Is yours primarily the antidepressant variety or the anti-anxiety stuff?
I haven't actually thought about the breakdown of them for a while. But I think it definitely covers both. And then anti-anxiety, I also have another medication I can take sporadically if I need to for that.
And if you don't take it, do you immediately know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
What does it do?
My behavior starts acting up. Mm. I do suffer from physical withdrawals from one of them. So I actually know a day or two after I've missed one that I have missed it because I experience these sort of electric shocks that go through my body. Every time I'm about to action something. So let's say I'm at a robot and it turns green and my mind now has jolted into actioning my body into doing something. That's when I'll experience the shock. No, otherwise I know when my behavior starts acting up, when I start having worse and worse thoughts, I might cry. I just start losing even more so the ability to get into the shower, to clean up the kitchen. I know.
You're totally demotivated and everything is just too much to bear and that kind of thing.
Yeah, you start becoming dysfunctional.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder... I wonder how many people are on this stuff and genuinely need it and how many people are on it just because it makes them feel better. Do you know that I'm not trying to in any way minimize someone's suffering. And if they've gone to their doctor and their doctor has said that they need to be on this stuff, I presume that they and their doctor know what's good for them. But I think there might be some people who just take these things to feel better. Because otherwise it would be too hard for them to just make it through the day. Is that sufficient as a diagnosis?
Well, I think, they work in a very specific way by creating, so they can work in 2 ways as far as I understand, 2 of many, but these are the 2 that I know. And that's by either producing more of the happy hormones or creating receptors on the other nerve endings, creating more receptors because some people are born genetically with fewer receptors. So yeah. you're creating enough of the happiness, but it's not doesn't have anywhere to land. Yeah. So I think, and also, I mean, I've never ever felt euphoric or extremely happy being on antidepressants. It just brings me to a normal level where I'm able to function.
But like if I took them as someone who doesn't get depressed, if I took them, what would it do to me?
I can't answer that.
Okay, well, maybe Marion will know, because, I mean, I'm kind of curious. Maybe I should just do it as an experiment. But Tracy says something that I think is a very good point. People don't pretend to have depression. People pretend to be okay.
Definitely. Yeah, we're still at that point. I mean, there's so many things that I don't even share, and you know that I share a lot.
Sure.
Purely because I know people will still label it as lazy or pull yourself out of it. I keep a lot of things to myself.
Mr. Schmangel says, and this is the reason I asked the question, he says, I'm not even depressed, but I love the antidepressants. Makes me feel good. You should try it. And you see,
I think that's a little bit attention seeking, Mr. Schmangel.
Yeah, a little. Because I said the other day, and I've got to read this to you quickly. Sally sent an email to me saying, this isn't normally something I would do, but please tell Gareth to go and see a doctor for a checkup, even if he has been recently. He must mention the impending doom sensation. Any doctor will take that seriously. It could be indicative of some medical issue that's about to strike or underlying depression. Things that Gareth has said lately has made me question the depression angle, actually. There are other causes for the sensation, e.g. anxiety, and the doctor could rule those out or rule in various other options. So basically, Sally's saying she is concerned about her own situation at the moment, but that I must go for this check. Listen, it lasted for a few days. I'm kind of over it.
But also, granted, you can always go through a depressive slump. It doesn't mean just because you're going through a slump, you're now depressed for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So maybe there's merit in what Sally's saying. I'm still... I might have a very backward approach to medication, but I'm very scared of getting into medication because I think then you get stuck into it and it's just a slippery slope once you're relying on it. I'm not poo-pooing it. There's some people who need it. I know someone who has even said going into a mall is just enough to get them all hyped up and they can't go into a mall. So there are people like that. And then I think there's some who, if you can avoid it, I think.
I have to disagree with that. For instance, a lot of these medications change your chemical balance over time and work so well that eventually you might not need them anymore.
Yeah. No, I think, listen, this is very complicated stuff, but Janet says she'll send us an email explaining how these chemicals work if you're interested. It's pretty interesting to know how the balance of these chemicals can affect the mood. And Leanne has already indicated this, but there are some people who have, they're just born with an imbalance in those chemicals or a brain that doesn't necessarily send them or pick them up in the right places. And that's why this medication is very helpful. I do think that human beings, we're getting better at understanding and treating these things, but I think largely they are requirements of a modern society. And there are lots and lots of people on them. And for those people, they make life bearable. If you're the kind of person who's fortunate enough to not need them, then you consider yourself very lucky. Many, many people cannot go through the week without being on a series of medications that just help them to get through life.
And remember, these are the things that occur naturally in the body as well. And, you know, my psychiatrist has often said how someone like my dad, who is an athlete, create these chemicals themselves because of their high level of physical activity and may never, ever need the medication. So our lifestyles have a lot to play as well. We're not running around hunting bull to eat and gathering wheat in the fields. Yeah. So it's just the modern life, which is now messed even more with these chemicals.
But it's amazing how many people are actually kind of silently suffering and dealing with this shit every day. And how, you know, in previous years and in our past, there was no way for these people to be taken seriously. They would have been just told, part of it, you know, just deal with it.
Yeah, and just how And also just how much has changed in a short span of time. I've only had one incident where I still stand by and think it was a misdiagnosis. But anyway, I was diagnosed and was given medication, and that was 2016. Even just in my circle of friends, I have quite a few friends who think the way I do. It's like, oh, wants to start medication. And they already then, this was 5 years ago, people weren't on medication much. So it was like, what? You're going to be on medication? This is a big thing. And now you cut to it now. It's quite a common thing. And the taboo and the stigma, I think, is less.
Well, Roland says something interesting on the WhatsApps this morning. You can WhatsApp us on 0797482090. And Roland says, out of the young staff at my shop, there are three girls who are in their 20s who are on this medication. They're on social media. They live on it. And I think that's also part of the problem. All three are overweight and their profile pictures are not what they look like in real life. That's from Roland.
Oh.
So, I mean, maybe there's an element of, you know, the social media pressure that people are under that also chases them into these situations. Mm. And, you know, I mean, this is something that I've spoken to a lot of my friends about too. Exercise is massively important. Diet is massively important. A healthy relationship is massively important. Having meaning and purpose and a reason to get up in the day is part of it too. If none of those things are there and you are relying on just the medicines are only able to do some of the heavy lifting. You have to actually do some of it yourself.
Yeah. And also remember that a lot of times people are put onto medication because they want to start therapy or cognitive behavioral therapy sessions, and the psychologist or therapist is unable to work with them because their chemicals are so imbalanced that you can't even get started. So you sometimes need to go on them just to bring you to a level where you can improve your cognitive function and be able to take on new learnings.
Yeah, well, we're going to find out from Marion just now. She's going to join us and tell us about her book, and we'll figure out kind of a little bit more about this because it'll be interesting to speak to someone who spent a fair amount of time studying this. She's, of course, a well-known South African mental health journalist. She's done pro bono work for SADAG, that's the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, for 30 years. And she's put together a landmark series of personal stories that chronicle mental illness and recovery. It's called Surfacing, People Coping with Depression and Mental Illness. And the book is aiming to help to break the stigma and silence that's around. I don't think there's that much stigma around mental illness anymore. I mean, certainly not in my circles and not on this show. We've tried our best to be as matter of fact about this stuff as people are about physical illness.
Leanne, do you think so?
Can you just explain that again? Sorry.
You think there's stigma around mental illness? You think people are still...
Definitely. I mean, if I just think about myself, there's so much pretending that I'm okay that I do for work, for you guys, for my family, for friends, that it's exhausting.
Well, don't you stop that, because we're not going to pick up.
sorry. But when you, I assume like you pick up your medication at a pharmacy, right? Do you still feel like you need to look
from the same guy who used to bring you the booze during lockdown?
No, I don't.
Like,
do you feel like you
need to look at who's there before you go in, or?
No,
I know it's not like you're going to pick up cocaine, but yeah.
But it's also you don't stand there and go, "Hello, can I please have my antidepressant?"
Yeah.
it's all, you just say, "Hi, everything's on script," you know, and they've prepackaged everything.
But have you still got a huge pharmacy in your house? Because I remember you used to travel with like a pill box that was
well, it was a yeah. I did have I was brought up always having a very good first aid kit and every medication that was required. So I kind of took that on myself, and I was always the person on holiday that if you needed something for something, like you bashed your toe or you had a splitting headache, it was go to Leah and she'll have something, or for diarrhea or whatever. But no, it's very different now. I don't actually suffer from those like little niggly illnesses anymore.
Sia, do you have a very big medical cabinet, or you only have the basics?
No, yeah, just have. Yeah, really, not even the basics. It's only stuff that I've.
So if you needed stuff, you'd have to go to the pharmacy because you don't keep it on you.
Yeah, and I get it case by case of whatever I need.
If you can't get what you need, Leanne has bought up all the stock. So if you go to her, she'll be able to help you.
I get that.
Always make sure you've got, Leanne. I mean, like headache tablets.
Headache tablets or something for fever as well. I hate nausea. It's my worst. So always make sure I've got Valoid tablets or suppositories. I used to have Imodium for if I had incredible diarrhea and something for cramps.
So lovely.
But no, now I've got like Dettol and rash cream and something for like if I've got a cut or something from a cat, I've got ointment for that.
I've got headache tablets because occasionally I get a headache, but that's what, you know, standard like Myprodols or whatever. Then I've got antihistamines because, you know, there's some allergy. But otherwise, pretty much nothing.
I'll get mine.
Yeah, go and fetch. I want to see this.
How will she wheel the whole cabinet in?
She'll need the articulated crane that works down the road at the construction site to kind of help them. Jesus, she loves her medicines, eh?
No, but you always need people like Leanne around who are the people.
Where is it? Show us your stuff. She's gone.
So
I feel like this is the satellite version of the mothership elsewhere.
So I have these patches. I've used one out of these 10.
Okay.
So that was for pulling a muscle. You know, good old Savlon, some Carvol if there's a blocked nose that you can put some on your pillow. Some like headache tablets.
Right.
Good old Vicks.
What are those?
Most of this is not, a lot of this stuff isn't prescription. In fact,
no. That's some Gaviscon for heartburn. Arnica for sprains and bruises.
Right.
this ointment for if I have a sore or something like that.
Ointment.
And some nose spray. That's it.
So that's not.
You even look confused by the nose spray.
No, I mean, that's not a lot. So, Leanne, I mean, really, what we should do is maybe get someone on, like a paramedic or a doctor or somebody, get them to tell us what is essential for every house's medicine cabinet.
I always have one of those medical kits in my car, and I need to update mine. Everything's expired.
With bandages and that kind of thing, sure.
Yeah, burns stuff, and I've never, ever had to use them.
I would like to just know that we're all prepared, and like we you know, it's kind of the stuff that you absolutely need. So even for Sia, who's not at all paranoid, to have a list of what you actually should have in your medical cabinet, don't you think it would be handy?
Yeah
because we
don't need an expert to tell you can just ask me.
I'm actually quite impressed, like yours is not that bizarre. You used to have a lot more because you used to carry around a little box with like compartments in it with different pills in the boxes. And you had everything from, like, you know, this was for if you had the runs, this is for if you were constipated, this is for if you had sore muscles, this is what, like a relaxant, you had the whole thing. So you've trimmed down on your supplies there. Carl says he's only 35. He has antidepressant meds, chronic heartburn meds, probiotics, cholesterol meds, antihistamines, nose spray, and he takes all of that every day.
Yeah.
Wow.
Every day.
Yeah. I can identify with that. Yes, depression meds, heartburn meds, I'm also on every day. I'm on high blood pressure meds, low functioning thyroid meds. What else to say? Oh, a weekly prescribed vitamin D. We've
got a call. The Joe Biden's on the line. Yes, Joe.
Hi.
Oh, dear.
Hi, everybody. Yeah. Come on, man. I love this conversation because I love all the old people medications. And that's all you guys have been talking about for the last half hour. I love when you talk about old people and medication. That's all I love.
So do you have one of those pill bottles that when you've opened it, it lets you know that you've already opened it today, that you shouldn't open it again?
What's that?
Those medication bottles.
Huh?
Where you open the lid once.
Oh, he clearly hasn't taken his hearing medication.
Who are you? What am I doing here?
Ooh.
What day is it? Where's Jill?
Someone wheel him back to the bunker, please.
What am I doing? Where's that nice colored lady, Kamala? Isn't she in charge? Somebody help me.
But really, we have been talking about medication and mental health for a little while. We've got Marion Scher coming on. She's a proper expert in this field, but I thought we'd start the ball rolling. I mean,
and boy, did we get it rolling.
So Andre, Andre messages us every day, and he's definitely got some problems, but he says he owns them all. He's proud of all his mental health disorders. And he says he's got approximately 50 prescriptions, supplementations, and various over-the-counter medications. Sweet Jesus.
Jeez.
Wow.
Yeah, that doesn't sound long term, like you're going to be with us for very long, Andre. I think you better just count the days, dude. Just be grateful. every time you turn us on and we can hear you, and we can get messages from you, I'm going to go like say a little prayer. Andre, it doesn't sound like you've got long to go. Rickus says, for all these years, I always wondered what Gareth uses to make his voice like that. What is this thing? It's like a bullhorn. What do they call it?
Loudspeaker, loudhailer.
Loudhailer.
No. Oh, I thought he meant like just naturally in general. Like,
his esophagus.
Yeah.
Listen to this. Lee said, my mom has a massive stash of medication that she brought back to Malta from South Africa. I joke that she could be a dealer with the sheer amount of pills she has. But when you go to a pharmacist and you ask for headache tablets, they're not going to give you like 2 years' supply, right? You're going to have to go a couple of times.
No, you can buy headache tablets without a prescription.
Yeah, but would you buy like 10 boxes?
No, because they expire. Oh. Do you remember, I remember Nicole Fox, remember she went and lived in Nigeria for a while.
Yes.
And it's so difficult to get hold of good medication there.
Sure.
That one of the suitcases that she would take back to Nigeria with her when she visited Joburg was just basic medication stuff for home. Like I just told you now.
The whole suitcase was full.
Yeah. So, I mean, we forget. And it's the same in America and the UK. Those medications are so expensive. We take it for granted that we can buy a year's supply of Panado.
But also maybe if you're living with sickly people or if you are a sickly person, like I know, no, I'm not making fun of them, Gareth, but I know with my parents, my goodness, it is, to call it a portion of the pantry would be an understatement because they're actually, it's in the pantry, it's in their bedroom, it's in their bathroom. There's everything there because every now and then someone needs to go for surgery or someone has this or someone has that. They actually gave me a bit of like medication when I left this December. So I thought, oh, okay, thanks. Here's some Vicks and whatnot.
Old people love this stuff.
Yes, they do.
Old people have their pill boxes and then one is labeled Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And at the beginning of the week, they put all their different pills in.
I have that. I have to have that.
Yeah, you see, like old people and Leanne.
Yeah.
Favorite thing to do.
Yes.
I first got one of those when I was actually, it was mostly supplements that I was taking. But I realized how much time I was taking every morning and night to open and close bottles.
No.
That little guy helps a lot.
Yeah, I mean, listen, some people. Listen to this quickly. This is interesting. My daughter sustained deep burns over 10% of her body when she was 11. I was not prepared. From that day onwards, I've been keeping a whole pharmacy in my home just in case.
Mm.
Sure, that's quite hectic. That's from Riyadh.
And remember, too, there are people with severe allergies, and you need to have some serious medications and shots and things available.
Well, here's a nice message from Greg. Greg says, listening to this show every morning helps me to deal with my shitty job and my depression. Well, that's cool. If we can positively help, that's great. I'm thrilled to hear it, Greg. Long may it last. If we stop having the effect, we got to up the dose. So you got to tell us when we up the dose, all right? Morning, guys. Guess who's turning 60 today? The South African Rand. So the Rant is 60 today, huh?
Yes, exactly right. And so there have been quite a few articles going around on what you could get for your rand back 60 years ago compared to now. So if you look at, I've got a list of some of them.
Well, let's just play, because it's the Rand's birthday. Let's play Decimal Dan, the Rant Cent Man.
Oh, nice.
It's a great song. It's love. So here it is. Just to celebrate the birthday of the Rand, our fantastic currency, which is making us less happy. But here it is. Here's Dan Hill in the orchestra with Decimal Dan. Here we go. Everybody, celebrate the Rand.
Decimal Dan, the Rand Cent Man, gives you cents for pennies whenever he can. 1 cent for a penny and two for two.
And two and a half for a dickie.
And notes and silver are worth the same.
Remember, it's just a change in their name.
Decimal Dan, the Rand Cent Man, gives you cents for pennies whenever he can. 3 cents for fourpence and four for five.
And 5 cents are worth a sixpence.
And notes and silver are worth the same.
Remember, it's just a change in their name.
Decimal Dan says, spend your old coins first.
Man, because you spend more pennies whenever you can. 6 for 7 pence, 7 for 8.
And 7.5 for 9 pence.
And notes and silver are worth.
I mean, no one would understand that now. If you,
no.
Seven and eight, no. But 7/8 for a 9 pence or something. I mean, like, we would be so confused.
Oh, completely. Okay, so here's what you could get for 1 rand in 1961, when the rand was first born.
All right.
What do you think you could get for a rand?
A pocket of potatoes.
No, so try this. You could probably get 450 grams of pure ground coffee.
Ah.
And right now, 250 grams will average 147 rand 38.
Sure.
You could buy for a rand 10 loaves of bread, wow, 15 kilograms of mealie meal, and 5 packets of cigarettes.
Sure.
Oh, the good old days.
One rand.
1 rand, yeah. You could buy, for instance, 570 ml beer. And 6 of those.
Okay.
In the meantime, the current price is, because those were 16 cents each, and you got a 2 cents refund, remember?
Hmm.
And the current price for 330 ml lager is 14 rand 56 with no refund. Cigarettes, five packs of cigarettes would be 19 cents for a pack of 20. Current price is around 43 rand.
Jeez.
Inflation, darling.
Hmm. Decimal Dan, the Rant Cent Man, would have, you know, he would have helped you to spend your money much more wisely. You wouldn't have needed to, you wouldn't have even needed to have a lot of money in your wallet.
Because, no, would you even need a wallet? Although everything was in small increments, you know, you had those quarters and pennies and things like that.
Yeah. And a lot of people are saying that, you know, back in the 70s, the Rant was stronger than the British pound. For a while.
Jeez.
Oh, in the early 70s. That's interesting. So, I mean, listen, the Rant Cent Man, the Decimal Dan, that's what you need to remember. If you can actually figure out what the hell they're singing about, then you've done very well.
Remember, it's just a change in their name.
Decimal Dan, the Ron Cent Man, gives you cents for pennies whenever he can. 8 for 10 pence, 9 for 11.
And 10 cents are worth a shilling.
And 19 yeah. silver are worth the same.
Remember, it's just a change in their name.
I would never be able to figure out that, because they went from shillings and pounds and sixpence and that kind of thing to
a ticky. You also got a ticky.
Yeah, like a decimal.
What?
Mm. I just have to think of my mom's type of language where she'd say, yeah, in those days we'd get it for a ticky. I have no idea what that is.
It is. Like I wouldn't have any means of figuring out my way around the shop. And I wouldn't know if they put things in pounds and tickies and sixpence, I wouldn't know what the hell was going on.
You know, imagine pulling out a 200 rand note in 1961.
They used a D and they used an S and they used the, I mean, it's just all very, very complicated. Thank God we've worked things out in, like, you know, cents. There are 100 cents in a rand. I can figure that out.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not even good at maths when it's easy. Imagine how useless we would be if we have to figure things out that way. So listen, I mentioned earlier that we're going to talk to Marion Scherer, and I'm very excited that she's on the show this morning. Marion's just written a book called Surfacing, stories about people who are coping with depression and mental illness. And there's some background to this that you probably need to know. I mean, 1 in 3 South Africans are on medication for anxiety and or depression at the moment. An average of 1,400 people call the South African Anxiety and Depression Hotline every day. Those are just the people who know it exists. And we've spoken to the people from SADAG a number of times. But these are the people who are actually reaching out for help. So you can imagine there are many, many more people who are having a much tougher time and don't know who to go to. They might be on medication, or they might not even know that they are suffering from a particular kind of disorder. That just might be life to them. So I thought it would be fun to talk to, not fun, but certainly interesting to talk to Marion this morning. Marion Scherer, it's very nice to have you on the show. How are you, Marion?
I'm very well. Thank you, Gareth. Very well.
Good. And well done on the book. I'm sure it's really interesting reading, and I'll definitely make sure that I make my way through some of it. These are stories of people who are coping with depression and anxiety every day, right? So it's not some kind of scientific literature on the problem. It's more people's stories and experiences.
Yes, absolutely. I want to totally make it clear that I'm not a mental health professional. I'm a journalist. But ironically, over the last 26 years in particular, having met Zane Wilson, who you just mentioned, SADAG, Zane founded SADAG, that I started writing on mental health. I must be honest, I wasn't aware of what mental health really meant before this. And that led me to doing these stories. And I realized that when I write a story about mental health, and I'm talking about going back 26 years, I would get the biggest response from those stories than any other stories that I have ever written. And of course, as you say, lately it's got worse, obviously, with COVID. And this week, of course, is Prevention of Teen Suicide Week. And that's another huge issue. And that's in my book as well. Stories. There's one story, the opening story in the book is a teenage girl, 15, absolutely beautiful girl, Tenille Naidoo, and her mother Diane writes in the book about how, and it's very clear that she really had no idea this girl was struggling with mental health issues. And she took her own life. I mean, it's so sad. And there's other instances in the book, other stories similar. But it's, as you say, it's people battling with things every day. And I think my last thing to say on that is, why did I write the book, which people ask me, as against other books I've written? It's about the stigma, Gareth, and you know that. You've been very kind to SADAG and done so many stories that we're trying to break the stigma.
Marion, I'm so pleased that you've written this book, and I'm so pleased that you're doing your bit for the stigma. But I asked the question earlier because I sometimes think we're in a bit of a bubble on this show. We talk very often about mental health issues, and we talk about them very frankly, and we joke about them occasionally too, which I think is important because you have to have a sense of humor about yourself. And a lot of people who are suffering every day, if you don't laugh a little bit, it just makes it a whole lot worse. But we do take it seriously. And we constantly refer to the fact that there are there are things about mental health that are not as obvious as those things that people have to do with physical health, right? But how widespread is the stigma problem? Because I feel like we're entering a stage in human society where maybe it's not such a big deal anymore, where people aren't as judgmental as they used to be. I think we're certainly getting better. And maybe this isn't as bad as it once was, or am I being naive?
Well, I'd love to say it's getting better, but in South Africa, and I say that specifically because, let me give you an instance. In 2005, 2006, I was lucky enough to win a Carter Fellowship for Mental Health Journalism. That's from President Rosalynn Carter. It's Mrs. Carter's special project. And when you go to America and you go and you present your project, when I stood up in front of all these American experts from the finest heads of the finest universities, departments of psychology, psychiatry, and I said, oh, well, we don't have depression in South Africa. And they looked at me, and of course, they didn't know. And I said, well, that's what people think. And we spoke about the stigma. And now that's 2005, 2006. Has it gone down? I would say just by a tiny bit. And of course, look at across our culture line as well. And I'm not just talking about Black culture, any specific culture. It is there. So people would rather suffer in silence than go and see a mental health professional and get help. That is a very big issue. And even a good friend of mine, highly educated friend of mine, when she read the book, she said, oh, gosh, now I understand mental health. I was shocked, you know, and I've had that response. I think that's been the biggest response from the book. Now I understand mental health.
But how much of mental health is is able to be assuaged by medication or by therapy? And how much of it can people do to help themselves? I mean, we know, for example, over the course of studying mental health problems for in excess of 50 years in some Western countries, that, you know, diet's an important part of this, exercise is an important part of this, your kinds of relationships are a massive part of this, the work you do, having a purpose and a meaning, having responsibilities, all of these things impact in perhaps even greater ways than the ways that medication and therapy might be able to. But obviously for many people, they're just out of reach. What are we learning about that in South Africa?
So with mental health, of course, what people don't understand is two things. One is when you talk about depression, there's depression that can be, when is it more than just a bad day? And when is it real clinical depression? In other words, when is it just like you have a heart problem? Maybe you feel a slight heart palpitation. You go to your doctor and they tell you, okay, it's nothing. Take this pill, go, and it goes very quickly. With clinical depression itself, it's a blockage of something called serotonin to the brain. And then you would go to a psychiatrist. The difference between a psychiatrist and a psychologist is that a psychiatrist gives medication, a psychologist gives therapy, and you ask, what do you need? If it is severe clinical depression, or, of course, when we talk about mental illness, we've also got in the book bipolar, schizophrenia. There's several in between mental health issues, disorders. So there are clinical issues where an antidepressant, which I really want to kill that myth that you get hooked on them forever, that if you take an antidepressant, it's forever. It isn't, not by any means. I've done so many interviews where people said, antidepressants saved my life, really. And I was only on them for 6 months. But going back to what you said, it is so important. It can be your diet, you know, being involved in sports or even walking, art, whatever it is, especially at the moment during COVID, you know, we're all on the edge. Everybody, I think. I don't think there's a person in the world that says, oh, COVID hasn't affected me. Of course it has. So all of those things that you mentioned, your diet, all of those. And in fact, in the book, and I sound like I'm really plugging my book here, but we have a psychologist and some of the people in the book who've given tips. And that comes up all over and over again, is eating right, exercising, and of course, mindfulness. That's a very big one. So there's two sides to that. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I also wonder, you mentioned COVID, and I think that that has made things a little bit more than slightly difficult for everybody. But there are people who are suffering a lot more because they're socially completely isolated. Maybe their relationship has suffered enormously during, if they had a relationship during COVID, and that's also left them feeling very lonely, very anxious, very nervous, very depressed. There are obviously financial pressures on people like never before. All of that stuff must have made the mental health crisis that much harder for us to manage as a country. And we don't have the amount of social work that we need. We don't have the resources that we need. We have people who are severely traumatized. We know in this country with gender-based violence and with child abuse, how many people have their hardware damaged at an early age, not just the software of education or of therapy or of any of that stuff. So we're dealing with a very, very severe problem here.
So to answer your question in the two parts you've asked it, one is COVID.
Yeah.
And yes, that's impacted on everyone. Kids today are going back to school, and my kids are grown up, but I'm sure if I had a kid that was going back to school, you're obviously anxious, and of course for the teaching staff and the schools. So I know, we all know, I think it'll get better. Well, it has to get better, we hope, especially with vaccinations. Mm. But on the other side of it, with so little resources, this is definitely an issue. Even if you have medical aid, you're allowed, I think it is 3 weeks in a mental health clinic. If you go to recover from what used to be called a breakdown, is still called a breakdown, but it's perhaps clinical depression. Or if you go to see a therapist, you get something like 15 visits. And a therapist is important. It's someone you can speak to that's not close to you, but you can let everything out. And in this time, if you have got medical aid, especially, but even if you haven't, you know, there are obviously state appointed therapists, but people to say, I'm going to a therapist, it comes back to the stigma again. But I do want to go back to something you just said about children as well. My next book, I've said I want to do on bullying. And the reason is for this is almost everyone I interviewed in my book, almost everyone, quite a number of them, started off by bullying at school. There's a story in the book of a wonderful young man who attempted to take his own life, Darryl Brown, a fascinating story, and he's a wonderful young man. And he's gay, and he lived in a small little West Coast town, and it was really hard to come out. He's quite feminine, and he was very aware of this. So, of course, he got teased at school. Darryl's now in his He's about 30, 31 at the moment. So even then, he thought, well, when I go to high school, it'll be more in central Cape Town and the bullying won't be as bad, but and my life will be better. It wasn't. When I go to university, my life will be better, and it wasn't. He then went to London to work, and of course thinking, London, you know, it's so much more open. I'm gay. I can be much more open about this there. And he goes to London, and it didn't get better. And in fact, he decided to take his life, and it ended with him jumping in front of a London Underground Metro train. And he didn't lose his life, but he lost his legs.
Oh, geez.
After that, he ended up in hospital. And for the first time, he saw a psychiatrist and a psychologist who diagnosed his severe depression. And he got treated for it. And ironically, he's back in South Africa for quite a number of years now. He's the most delightful young man. He's living a fantastic life. Yes, he hasn't got legs. But weirdly, he lives a better life now. And he said because now he understands his mental health, he's very well mentally now, he takes part in all sorts of things. And there's several stories in the book like that. There's gentleman Sipho Simelane. And you talked about laughing. Well, it sounds awful, but when I interviewed Sipho for the book and he told me how he tried to take his life 3 times unsuccessfully in one day, him and I were rolling about the floor laughing because it's funny. He goes to Swaziland, which is his ancestral home. And he had a few dops because, you know, if you're going to take your life, you might as well. And he saw a railway track because he'd already bought a noose. He was going to tie himself to a tree and take his life that way. So with noose in hand, he sees a railway track and he thinks, oh, it's much easier. I lay down on the railway track. And then he's lying there for about 2 hours and no trains come. And he realized it's Sunday. The trains don't run. Oh, that's no good. And then he goes up and he finds a tree. And he's quite a slightly built chap. And let me emphasize, by the way, you talked about reasons for taking your life. He is a very, very successful. He is and was a very successful businessman. climbs up a tree, puts up his homemade noose, but it wasn't put up right. I mean, who knows how to put up a successful noose? And the next thing, he's on his backside on the ground. And he picks himself up, he finds another tree, does it again, same thing, on his bum, on the ground, and he started laughing. He is a little inebriated. And then the police find his documents, he's shredded. The story got funnier and funnier and funnier. And I even said to him, you've got a one-man show here, you know, and he would help to break the stigma if he tells his story. And there is humour. The original story, the name of the book, was going to be Stories of Hope, because every single story in the book, there's hope. And the reason there was hope was because eventually every single one was diagnosed. So the story, each story is almost in two halves. Before I got diagnosed, and when I say diagnosed, it doesn't mean clinically diagnosed, that you had to go on medication, as Gareth said. Let's look at what you have. I mean, AJ Fenter, that name's probably familiar to many people. Sure. He was a Springbok rugby player. AJ found himself after his incredible rugby career just battling with anxiety. You know, what do I do now? They don't really prepare these guys for life after rugby. Some are clever enough to go into business in some way. And AJ found himself battling with anxiety, but he found other ways of coping that wasn't medication. So it's stories of hope.
We do have extraordinary people in this country who have an understanding of an ability to help other people deal with mental health problems. And you mentioned SADAG, and we've obviously done quite a lot of work with them. But you've worked there for a time as well. And
yes.
And they do tremendous work. But it's not just someone talking to you on the phone in your moment of greatest need and stopping you from committing suicide. That's not the primary responsibility of SADAG, and that's not what they're trying to achieve only, although that's very important. Just tell us about some of the work they do, and also some of the people who work in mental health in South Africa.
Pleased you asked me that, because they're so often overlooked. And I must say, you know, I do media training, and a lot of organizations I do training for say, we can't criticize the government. We, you know, we can say this, but don't make us criticize the government. We all know for the obvious reasons. But I don't work for SADAG, so I can say that they get really zero help from the government. They wouldn't like me in a way to say that. But so you've got to understand that their biggest issue is funding. I work on their media side of it, helping them with media events and getting media and spreading the word. Because, you know, Gareth, 26 years ago, I was working for Men's Health magazine. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to the then editor and wanted to do a story on depression. He said it would depress my readers. Magazines weren't writing about it. They did towards the end, because it doesn't exist like so many magazines. They were writing about it. So from that point of view, things have changed. SADAG are incredible, because if you as a journalist phone SADAG, as you know, they will give you, not only tell you about whatever illness you're writing about, they'll connect you to a mental health professional. They'll connect you to a case study. This is unheard of. Cassie Chambers, Zane Wilson, who started SADAG. I mean, she's amazing. That's how I got involved. I had a column in Cosmo. I was sent to interview Zane, and that's how it started. Cassie Chambers and her team are amazing. It's been really hard during COVID, because their phone lines, they've had to divert them. They're working from home.
Right.
The psychologists, the psychiatrists give their time for nothing. As you said, people phone in, and I must also give a massive shout out for the companies that support them, especially SIPLA, who, have you got the details? I'm sure you're going to give your listeners, your viewers, those details of the SIPLA SADAG 24-hour helpline and suicide line. And anyone can go on the website. It's not necessarily, as you said, that someone will phone them and I'm going to take my life, but that does happen. They have talked people off ledges. I mean, literally, but it's more to direct you, because if you're phoning from Pietermaritzburg or you're phoning from Limpopo, they will find you help where you are, or you might want a support group. They do all of those issues, or they might just connect you with a clinic or hospital. But believe me, not a day goes by when they're not battling to get somebody into a hospital. That's the hardest thing, especially with COVID, obviously, because the beds, you know, aren't available.
Antidepressant and anti-anxiety medication prescriptions very expensive. I mean, I think about how many people in this country don't have money, and that's part of the reason that they're in the situation mental health-wise that they're in. They don't have any access to resources. They may be ashamed or embarrassed about this. And then they also can't afford the medication. I mean, all of that is just like a you know, perfect storm of problems, right?
Absolutely, 100%. Look, state hospitals do have medication, but they have often, they have what they call stockouts. So you might be prescribed a pill. I mean, especially if you're looking at serious mental health issues like bipolar and schizophrenia, they are vital that you stay on your medication. They are very, very real illnesses. And the most important thing is staying on those medications. And then you go to your clinic, and there are some wonderful clinics with really dedicated people working in them, but there's no drugs. I mean, that's a massive thing. And even if you do have medical aid, yes, the drugs are very expensive. And if you've used up your medical aid quota for those drugs, you've got a problem. So SADAG, another role SADAG plays, Zane Wilson, Cassie, all of us, sorry about the dogs barking in the background. One of the things is...
It sounds like a mental hospital.
No, I've got someone, actually what you can't see in my study, which I've blocked off, we suddenly sprung a leak in a pipe that's come through to my study. Somebody's come to find the leak. But people can get help, as I say. But what, how this all started as well with Mrs. Carter, why did President Carter, most American presidents do a lot of very good work when they finish their presidency. We'll see about Trump. I doubt it. But President Carter is a most amazing man. Anybody wants to go onto the Carter website and look at the work they've done in mental health. It's astounding. And Mrs. Carter, when... President Jimmy Carter became governor of Georgia before he was president. She was given good advice by the previous governor's wife, who said, choose a cause and stick to it. And she chose mental health. And she fought for what they call parity in health insurance. And she managed to get 34 states in America on a level. So if you had diabetes or heart disease, you were given, and you had schizophrenia or bipolar or severe depression, you got, your medical aid would pay the same. In this country, no. But we are fighting. We are fighting for it. We have made a certain amount of inroads, but we're not giving up. But sadly, we need more people to fight with us. I think people underestimate what SADAG does. It's massive.
Yeah, I want to let Leanne and Tia ask a couple of questions here too, because I feel I've been monopolizing your time so far. And
Leanne, so nice to meet you. And Leanne.
Leanne has a smorgasbord of medication that she's on. Start there.
Not that much for anxiety and depression, but I was diagnosed 22 years ago, and have been on medication for 22 years. That is a huge thing, you know, knowing many friends and family members who also suffer. Is the cost of the medication. And yes, medical aid does cover you, but only until, say, June. And then you're liable to pay for the rest of it yourself. So I'm glad to hear that there is something happening towards that, because so many people do go off of their medication. You know, when it comes to between buying food and buying your medication, you're going to buy food. A lot of people just saying, because, you know, you feel okay once you're on the medication, and you feel empowered enough to come off of it. And it might save me some money is often the argument. Reality is that 2 weeks down the line, you're in a worse position than you were if you had have stayed on it. So, yeah, not really a question for me, but just glad to hear that something is being worked towards for that, because I know it's a huge issue, and not only with people who are on the poverty line, you know, people in general, especially in the times that we're in now with COVID.
We have to keep fighting this. I mean, we are continually in discussion with government, with the various medical aid companies, but it really is an uphill battle. I'm afraid to say, Leanne, I wish I could tell you better news. As you say, coming off your medication, this is a big issue with bipolar and schizophrenia, especially bipolar. The medication makes you feel so much better. And this is the most common thing. So you think you're better, you come off your medication, but very sadly soon. And what was pointed out to me by one of our country's greatest experts on bipolar is, I always tell people not to use your hands in interviews, but if I can show you. So you go on meditation and you're leveling off. What people don't realize, I'm talking about with bipolar specifically, is when you come off that medication, you go down. So then you go back on, but you'll never go back up to that level. You will stay on that level. And that happens every time. So the situation with medication is severe. And these stockouts are really, in our government institutions, is really a huge problem. Leanne, also with generics, the thing what people say will say to you, oh, we'll take a generic, it's cheaper. But as I'm sure you know, once you stabilize somebody on us, and you can try it very often, Gareth, you have to try several different antidepressants, several different medications for whatever mental health illness you have. And if you're lucky enough, I suppose, to find a good generic, that's fantastic. But it's not always easy. So there's a lot of issues here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've experienced myself as well that some generics, even though they are chemically identical, and I don't know enough about this, that some of them just haven't worked for me and I've had to go back to the original.
Exactly.
I wonder how many people use alcohol and drugs as a coping mechanism for what is underlying an underlying mental health issue. Because we know in South Africa we've got massive problems in that respect too, don't we?
Well, they go together. Ironically, they do use, you're absolutely right, Gareth, that they use alcohol and drugs, which compounds it, and makes it worse. And as you say, it's easier to get, but it makes the condition worse. But it kind of goes with the condition. There's a story in the book, a lady called Yvette Hest. You might like maybe even one day to have Yvette on as a guest. And that's the story of her life, going off her pills, getting worse, hell of a manic behavior. And also with bipolar, you have these manic highs and then these extreme lows. And the pills and the booze help with the manic highs. And they enjoy those manic highs, that they don't actually want to really go off those manic highs. There's so many issues. It's absolutely a fascinating subject as well, as a journalist, as a writer, to write about.
Well, thank you for your book, because I think it'll help a lot of people to get their heads around what other people are going through and the stories of hope, as you say, that, you know, it's never a hopeless situation and there's always something that makes it worthwhile and there are ways to cope with all of these predations on our mental health. But keep up the good work, Marion. It's always good to see
you. Thanks so much.
Thanks for being here this morning. Yeah, very good. Thank you. There's Marion.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
The book, by the way, and we'll give you the SADAG details in a moment, but the book is called Surfacing: People Coping with Depression and Mental Illness. And if you do want to get hold of SADAG, then what you can do is, here are the numbers. They can help you, connect you to all the different people that might be able to give you the very particular and specific advice that you need. But if you're worried about someone, even if it isn't you, who may be struggling to cope, who is suicidal, who is at risk of harming themselves, you can refer them to SADAG, or you can call them yourself. SADAG, the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, on 0800 21 22 23. That's 0800 21 22 23. And SADAG will provide you with free telephone counseling, crisis intervention, information and referrals nationwide. They have more information on their mental health website too. Go to sadag.org. All right, everybody, there's some useful stuff to know. There's some interesting discussions to have. And we will be back tomorrow, 6 a.m., bright and early.
Very good.
Thank you, Ass. Thank you, Sia. And most especially, thanks to you for being part of the show. I just want to finish up with this from Andre. Andre says, a sense of humor, my dog, and Cliff Central makes my life worth living. Wow. It's a lot of responsibility. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a huge amount of responsibility. Thank you, Andre. And thank you, everybody else. We'll see you tomorrow, bright and early. CliffCentral.com.